Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, the Survival Mode Disruptor, Leticia, and I am super happy today to have Dallas with us. Dallas, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Dallas Collis. I'm calling from the west coast of Canada on Vancouver Island. And I'd like to begin is see if you and I can agree on something. And that's this. What does everyone want in their life? What does every parent want for their children? What do we all strive for? What is our ultimate destination? And I'm going to suggest it is simply to be happy.
Yes, I was going to say happiness.
A peaceful heart, a loving mind, just happiness. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, why aren't we?
What's that's an interesting question.
What's stopping us?
There is a multitude of answers for that.
I think there's one.
What's that?
The story.
Okay.
You are a story.
Yes.
I am a story.
Yes.
We are storytellers.
Absolutely.
If I meet you at a cocktail party, Dallas, this is Leticia. Leticia Dallas. Hi, Leticia. Tell me something about yourself. And the self you begin to tell me about is a story you believe is you.
Yes.
Our history is who we self-identify as. Everything we've gone through from childhood on creates chapters in our story. And everything we do is based on yesterday. All our knowledge is our history, is our memory. Mm-hmm. That's who we are. And so we associate ourselves and our self-image as this story that we carry around with us.
I love how you frame this.
So if the beginning of your story has trauma, trouble, disconnection, disassociation, all these things that cause fear and insecurity, that's called emotional baggage. That's parts of your story that you drag with you. And that's the weight of your story. That's the weight that makes you tired. That's the weight that makes you worry, concerned, anxious about tomorrow, regretful about yesterday. This is the story mind, I call it. It's not the toolbox brain, because you have a toolbox brain that learns stuff, math and English and a little bit of science and techniques and tools to get through life. And that's our normal toolbox brain. But we also carry this story mind. And the story mind is the part that we really associate as. And how you find this is when we met, you and I, you first said, I'm a sister, I'm a brother, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a child, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a nurse, I'm a plumber. you associated to these high level interacting in the world, the masks. And that's who we first learn we are from each other. The story mind comes out as we get to know each other more and we go deeper. And I learn about your feelings, your emotions, what they're attached to. And the better friends we become, the lower we get into the story, until we find the real Letitia, the real Dallas, the one who is anxious, worried, not always confident, trying, but hard and upset and angry, and all these things that swirl around in our life. And that's the story that we carry with us. So my story had emotional and physical abuse early on, created a lot of baggage. I came out of my childhood knowing I was not smart. I was not capable. I was a failure, a loser. Life was going to be hard for me. I was not good enough. And I lived that way for a long time. But over time, this pain builds heavier and heavier in us. And we look for ways to escape the pain. And the first addiction we all go to, all of us, is blame. We get addicted to blame because blame is a defensive system. It's not me. They did this to me. School did this to me. The church did this to me. Everything out there hurt me. Not me. Nothing to do with me. I'm not responsible for this. So blame is really addictive because it's instantly this great defense. I'm not at fault. Of course, this first addiction starts to wear off for everyone because that little voice in the back of the head from the toolbox brain says, yeah, maybe you could be partly responsible here. Maybe it's not just everybody else. But we don't want to face that. And when the pain's big, you reach for a better addiction. For me, it was alcohol. And alcohol was wonderful. You're instantly happy. You're partying with friends. You're having a good time. I'm feeling no pain. And hey, courage? Why do you think they call it liquid courage? I'm doing great now. Of course, that drug begins to wear off. And you need more of it. You need harder drugs. So I added other drugs to it. And this becomes addiction. Because now your body, your whole system goes, ah, this is the state I want to be in. And so it produces all the chemical attachments that go, oh yeah, stay here. This is good. If you get out of here, it's going to be real painful. So stay here. It's like being stuck in your favorite chair. Oh, it's comfortable and it's cozy, but you also know it's hurting you because you're not doing what you should be doing. And so this disruption, this fight is going on in the head. So me, like many, many other people, nothing special here, nothing special, but a tragedy too. A horrible position for human beings to get to. And then I got lucky. I woke up one morning with cancer. Absolutely the best day of my life. I could not pray for a better moment to happen to me. And in 12 months, exactly a 12-month period from day to day, I went through cancer, surgery, treatment, separating from my life, losing my house, my business, my family, ending up alone, broken, suicidal, and still alcoholic. 1 year inside a pandemic. All that happened. I call it the year of life collapse. The greatest year of my life. I could not be happier than to have gone through that year. Because if I hadn't gone through that year, I would still just be an alcoholic, drug addict, angry, messed up human being. Nothing would have changed me. That broke down all the walls. It took the whole life away. And it laid me bare and naked to the world with nothing to defend myself with. And so I only had two choices, die or get back up. There is no other choice. There's no black and white. There's no in between there. You do or you don't. And again, I got lucky, I call it. I'm listening to a podcast. It's just playing in the background on YouTube. And I'm cutting vegetables for dinner. Not really listening. And a man on the podcast is talking about consciousness. And he says this one line. He says, "Show me yesterday." That was it. I literally dropped the knife and almost fell on the floor. It hit me so hard. As I began, I talked about our whole being, our whole attached being and our consciousness is all about yesterday, what we've been through, our memories, the baggage we carry. This line, "Show me yesterday." I can't, Leticia, I can't go to a cupboard and pull yesterday out and go, "Look, here it is." Where is it? It isn't anywhere. It doesn't exist in any reality other than the one made in my mind. Memory, imagination. That's all I carry the story mind with me. It doesn't exist. It's not real. And yet I let that belief almost kill me. How is that possible? So for me, it was a realization that it's not true. I've believed a story of lies. And most of it was created by other people telling me this boy isn't smart. This boy is bad. He's unruly. We have to discipline him. We have to lock him in cupboards. We have to hit him with straps to make him behave well. This was all done to me. It's not me. That's a story I believe is the reality. Now, the traumatic event took place 50 years ago. It hasn't happened in 50 years. So why am I carrying it? There's no rule here. There's no command by God that I must carry this pain. There's no such thing. It's me believing it's true. You believed things 10 years ago you don't believe today, right? And you will believe things in 10 years from now that you don't believe today. So what is the truth of any belief? Any belief is only as true as me believing it. As soon as I realize this, put down the damn bags. You don't have to carry anything. There is no fear. There is no insecurity. There is no problem. There is no regret from the past. There is no anxious tomorrow because they don't exist. They're fabrications in my mind. This is real. You and I are right here, right now, talking to each other. It's the only real there is. I am only alive today. One day, my whole life happens. That's why I call myself a 16-hour coach. You can't live tomorrow. You can't live yesterday. They don't exist. Every day is just today. In 16 hours, could I eat a little better? Could I exercise a little bit? Could I call someone and tell them I love them? Could I do the best focused work I can do? Could I be the best human being I can be? Can I be as happy as I want to be? Can I not worry? Yeah, one day. Of course I could do that. Well, that's every day. The only reason you ever worry about something is from your past or your future. There is nothing right here. It's you and me right here. That's it. It always is. It's me and my child. It's my coworker and myself. It's the guy at the gas station and me. It's the woman at the grocery store and me. That's all there ever is. Everything else we fabricate and believe. Just a belief. You know, when I was at the bottom, a friend of mine, a drinking buddy, also went to the bottom at the same time. And he ended up on the streets, classic fentanyl, just a mess, lying in the gutter, almost dead. And his change was someone came along talking about God. And he attached to religion, went to meetings, realized this belief. It lifted him up. He stopped doing drugs. His life is great. What happened? He found a different belief. All we do is believe. You can believe it's the end of the world, and it is. You can believe the sun's coming up, and it does. We create our own life. Nobody else does it. You can't make me happy. I can be happy to be with you, but that's my choice. You can't make me happy. You can't make me sad. I can decide to be sad because you're here, because I hold something against you, but that's me. Nobody makes you happy. Nobody fills you. Nobody meets your needs. That is the detachment that destroys us. So I come to this deep place. When you look, when a baby is born, the first thing that baby does comes out of the womb, and what does it do? So I think that is the original trauma. That is our original attachment to fear and insecurity. Within a couple of minutes, the baby is measured, weighed, wrapped in a towel, put on mom's chest, and the baby goes from to security, fearless. And there we are in this conundrum between fear and insecurity and comfort and security. The comfort and security is the real life. Look into the baby's face when they're in comfort and security, and what does every human being see when they look into that face? They see beauty, love, and happiness. That's all anyone sees in a new baby. We're not seeing the baby. I think it's our heart is being reflected in the baby's face. It's our true self that we see in the baby. The beginning of life, we are happiness and beauty and love. 3 months ago, my mother died. 2 hours before she died, I looked into her face. And what did I see? I saw the baby's face. Beauty and love and happiness. The beginning of life and the end of life, we are our true selves. In between, we fill it with a dramatic story that we believe is who we are. And it covers up who we really are. And the struggle of life is to uncover the story, to question ourselves. We're the only species alive who is able to say to our own self, what if? What if my story isn't true? What if I've believed a lie? What if I'm healthy and happy and beautiful and loving? I'm not scared and hurt and disordered. There's something wrong with me. What if that's just a story I'm believing? What if I'm fine? What if life is beautiful? What if? Leticia, that's where I'm at.
I love this, Dallas. So my first question to you is, how would you describe survival mode?
You really helped me here. Just in the last few days, I'm writing a new book. And I talk a lot about survivor badge. That we have a culture of survivor. And we do it in a way that, look at me, I'm strong, I'm a survivor. And I think it's a terrible fragility. I think
agree.
It's a huge mistake. Cancer survivor, narcissist survivor. It just goes on and on like they've done something great. And I think, no, this is absolutely wrong. This is completely wrong. And when I started thinking about how you had put that forward as a mode, I started to change my association and think, survival mode is the story. Our nervous system is trying to understand the story. And it is a stressful, tense operation to live in. And so everyone is constantly under this massive stress to their nervous system because they're living in survival mode. So I was living in survival mode until my body said, no more. You have to deal with this. And what did it do? It brought me cancer. It said, you die or you change. That's how I took it. It brought me this loss of life, losing my wife, my house, my family, my business, everything. It was a wake up. It was survival mode saying, you cannot stay there. And people get heart disease and people get depression and all sorts of things happen. These are all knocking at the door of survival mode saying, you cannot stay here. You have to get out of your little lifeboat. Swim in the ocean. It's beautiful. You're being afraid. You're trying to hold on and survive. And the addiction of the survivor badge is, look at me. I'm in survival mode and I'm hanging on. Ain't I great?
Yes. Dallas, you have me smiling because you said so much that I agree with wholeheartedly. And I really want to go back to the thing you said about blame being an addiction and how we shift. Anybody who knows anything about addictions knows that addictions are often transferred, right? If you aren't dealing with the core of the issues, you just transfer your addictions.
Absolutely.
So it's really interesting that you say, you know, the very first addiction we have is blame. And it starts at as soon as we can talk, really.
Yes.
We are passing the buck. And that was very interesting because one of the things that I say about exiting survival mode is simply taking radical ownership. I had a moment, I was arrested on my corporate job. And my mom, that you talked about a single sentence. My mom asked me a single question and it hit me like a tight Mike Tyson body blow. She asked me, why do I love everyone else more than I love myself? And I was left having to resolve that answer because one thing about our mind, our brain, cannot resist a question. I went back from my visiting room to my jail cell and sat with that. And it made me realize something huge, which was the start of my exit, was that I may not have been the reason why I had been locked up that day, but my decisions, the summation of my decisions, were the reason I was there that day. And that was me taking radical ownership of my life.
Right.
Right. Another thing that you mentioned was when you heard that sentence and you fell to the ground, it was the awareness of what you, the narrative that you have been holding on to for a very long time. And I liken the exit of survival mode to three phases. One, awareness. Two, reprogramming. And three, reinvention. You talked about the reprogramming by the way that you talked about the story, which I thought was done with such beauty. We attach our identities to the narratives that we hold on to, that then becomes our identity, right? So you spoke about how oftentimes, you know, we celebrate being a survivor. That becomes our identity. But it also attaches us to victimhood. And I remember being there. I remember saying, I survived being stabbed. I survived years of abuse. But what I was doing was continuing the narrative because I didn't have the awareness that survival wasn't the final destination.
Yeah.
And in society, we are made to believe, well, as long as you survived, you've made it. And that isn't it.
I agree. I could not disagree with you more. I mean, agree with you anymore.
And the last thing that was very interesting, and I'm sorry, is the fact that you had so much gratitude. Almost everyone that I've spoken to thus far, and they've discussed their journey, there was this level of gratitude, particularly in the awareness part, right? Like, I finally had this awareness, and I'm so grateful because it was the catalyst for me changing my life.
And I push back against gratitude. I don't believe in gratitude.
Okay.
Gratitude is out there for something. I am grateful for what I went through and what I realized and what I've uncovered. Gratitude is, I'm grateful they gave me something. I'm grateful I received something. That's out there. And I'm totally against this externalizing of anything, because the radical responsibility is understanding its appreciation of in here. It's not gratitude for out there. So that's just a little philosophical thing I have, but I think it's really important because of this. I'll say to people, one, you accept radical acceptance that this happened to you in the past. You cannot change that. Accept that it happened. And then the next step is to take radical responsibility for it. And this is the point. People get very angry. You're blaming me. And I'll say, no, I'm not. Taking radical responsibility is saying, yes, I accept this thing happened. But I'm the one responsible for carrying it with me. No one else made me do this. The radical responsibility is I own this. I can only appreciate my position. I am not grateful for what happened. I am ungrateful that it happened. But my responsibility is to be appreciate my being. That I can own this. Yep, it happened. It will never go away. The trauma will always be there. But I never have to visit it if I don't want to. I can put it in a shoebox, put it up on the closet, and say, yeah, it's still in my house, but I never go look in the shoebox because it doesn't serve me. And I know that now. And I know that that service is my belief. And that's the detachment of the attachment disorder that we attach to an event and decide it's us and become
It
a
becomes our
survivor. And
becomes
that's
our
what we've,
whole identity.
and we've attached to this survivor who's strong. I can fight through it. And all you're doing is carrying it. I'm on alcoholic groups and sites. And the biggest thing you'll see is the constant declaration of how long they've been sober. Oh, 2 years sober, 390 days, on and on and on. And I thought it was a long time, realized this is the badge of the survivor. This means they're not really unattached from their addiction. They're still carrying it as a badge of honor. How many days you sober? I go, today, I'm sober. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. There is no time. I'm just not. When I quit drinking, it was that. 10 years I tried and couldn't do it. Why? Because I was fighting. I'm fighting the reason I'm drinking. I'm fighting the pain of the past. The drink has nothing to do with it. It's just medication. A doctor could have given it to me. Anyone. It doesn't matter. And if I found it in pornography, it's a medication. And if I found it in food, it's a medication. And if I found it in going to the gym 10 hours a day, it's medication. Something to change my mood, take my mind off the pain. Once I got rid of the pain, put my bags down because it's just a belief, there's no reason to have medication. It serves no purpose. So there's no addiction. Addiction isn't a disease. There's no disease here. Depression isn't a disease. It's the nervous system saying, I'm shutting down all your sense of feelings because you have overblown the system. I'm throwing the switch and shutting you down until you get your shit together. Mm-hmm. That's what it's saying. It's saying you're responsible. The blame has to end. The addiction has to end. You have to stop believing. And I say this, stop believing in yourself. Because the self you believe in is the story you're attached to. Why do we want to believe in a self that isn't? We have got it all wrong. So it's this. We disconnect from our true selves, love, beauty, and happiness, and we attach to the externality of life.
Mm-hmm. Which then becomes our story.
I've got a house. I've got a car. I've got a partner. I've got children. Me, I own these things. I get achievement. I reach a goal. Everything is external. And we attach to all these pieces. And we wonder why we've lost ourselves. Because we're completely disconnected from our true self and attached to this story and this drama that we think is real life. And it's pulling us around and making us worry about what we did yesterday and regretting something. And well, what's going to happen tomorrow? I got to be ready. And we're constantly living in this crazy teeter-totter of drama and storm running around in our heads. And we think it's normal. Hey,
Dallas, yes.
Hey, Leticia, you got to grow up and understand life is hard. It's a struggle. How ridiculous. Life is easy. There's no struggle. The struggle is believing the storm.
Yep.
That it's is the struggle.
Yes. Yes.
There's Dallas. Nothing hard about you and I being right here. You
nothing.
And I right here are not struggling.
No, we are not.
No one struggles. We just think it's a struggle.
It boils down to our beliefs and the stories we tell ourselves.
Oh, climate change. Oh, Donald Trump. Oh, oh my God. You know, everything is just this storm and drama. Well, if you attach to it, yeah, life is hard. It's crazy. It's a weird world. But if you connect to the world, take anyone and have them go walk in a forest and watch what happens to them. Take anyone and stand beside the ocean and watch what happens to them. Mm-hmm. What is happening? They're connecting to life. Mm-hmm. They're connecting to just being, to the baby and to my dying mother. Being. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. It connects us to where we're supposed to be, a part of life. Not this scared little insecure creature running around believing all this crap. And it's available to everyone, and everyone is strong enough to go there. No one is weak. Your only weakness is your belief in being the survival mode, operating in the story, hanging on to this crazy storm, hoping you don't drown. That's all belief.
You've given us so much to think about here, Dallas. And again, I love how you have framed things, right? It makes it digestible. It really makes us think about something. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
So
tell us a bit more about you and how we can connect with you and find you online.
Well, today, if you have my name, you can't hide.
This is
that's
true.
That's my latest book. It's called The Gift is the Present. And that's just about the day, being living today and not worrying about everything else. DallasCollis@gmail.com.
Okay.
I'm online. You know, you'll find me at Facebook and everywhere else. It's just real life today. I don't worry about that.
Okay. Well, we'll put all of that information in the show notes. But before we end this episode, Dallas, what is one thing you want to leave with the audience?
Investigate your story. One of the things I do when I coach people in the beginning is I'll have them take their phone and record themselves video telling their story as if they were telling it to a friend. And then play it back to themselves as if they were the friend watching the story about this person. Try and detach from your story, and you start to see the BS in your story. Little things start showing up, and you start to question. And it's just to lead you to say, what if? What if my story isn't really me? What if it doesn't control me? What if yesterday doesn't determine today? If we can question ourselves, we can go somewhere.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Dallas, thank you so much. One of the things that I said to you was I was excited to talk to you because you had disruption in your description, and I'm all about this disruption, and I absolutely love how you broke this down for us. And listeners, make sure you connect with Dallas. And I just want to remind you were not built to break. But you damn sure were not built just to survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.